Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Dan Assel Show, previously broadcast live on LinkedIn on Thursday the 20th of April. The virtual event was co-hosted by me and Julius Solaris, founder of Boldpush, a consulting and research agency for the events industry. We were joined live by three senior event industry leaders and over 200 event professionals for a discussion which centered around the in-person events boom. The Dan Assel Show is gratefully supported by TF Connect, Tarsus Group, 19 Group and Terrapin, and the official venue sponsor, Carbon Neutral Conference and Exhibition Centre, BDC London, who are currently setting their sights on reaching net zero by 2030. Visit bdc.london for more information. Please check out all of my content on danassel.com and be notified first about new episodes by subscribing to my YouTube channel and by following me on Spotify and Apple Podcast platforms.
So let me start by introducing myself. I'm Julius Solaris. I love LinkedIn a lot, so you probably see me here hanging out and spending some time. I'm the founder of Boldpush. We're a consulting and research agency for the events industry. We work with event tech, large events, and we do a lot of analysis, especially when it gets to in-person versus virtual. So I'm very excited for the panel today. I'm joined by the amazing Dan. Dan, introduce yourself, please, for the audience.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much, Julius, and welcome, everybody. I think we were pleasantly surprised with the 700-plus pre-reg. So well done for Julius for coming up with a topic name. I'm Dan Assor. I currently an event producer, putting on some events both in the UK and the US in the institutional finance space. And you might have seen me on LinkedIn, similar to Julius. I publish a lot of content. I have a podcast called The Dan Assel Show. I'm not an egomaniac. I just chose that name because it was the easiest. So yeah, great to be here. Looking forward to it.
All right. Should we kick off?
I think we should. And I think what we're going to do first, Julius, and I should say, and I think you might have mentioned it, any questions, put them in the chat. Julius is going to be monitoring that. And let's see how we get on with them. You do your best. Right. So we're going to start by introducing our stellar panel who have kindly given up their time today. So welcome, Jessica Blue. And hello. Jessica is, even though she has an English accent, she assures us she is broadcasting live from LA. And Jess, since 2019, has been an executive vice president of Emerald. Prior to that, she was SVP of the global licensing group of Informa Markets. And for those that aren't aware, Emerald delivers 142 live events, 16 media properties across design, equipment, retail, safety, security, and technology. So welcome, Jessica. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And next up is Karina Bauer, all the way from Brighton in the UK, I believe. Karina has been the CEO of IMEX Group since 2009 and former chair of the Association of Event Organisers. And the IMEX Group organises two global trade shows in the meetings and events sector, IMEX America and IMEX Frankfurt, which is taking place next month, 23rd to the 25th of May. So welcome, Karina.
Thank you.
And last but certainly not least, all the way from New York is Paul Miller. Again, another Brit, but again, was sitting in New York. Paul has been the CEO of Questex since 2018. And prior to that, was president and managing director of Informa. Questex, Paul reliably informs me, has 70 events currently in markets that help people live better, live longer and enable experience, namely hospitality, travel, wellness, life science, technology and healthcare. So welcome to the panel. Thank you for giving up your time today. We're in three different time zones, I think. So it's exciting.
We're in three different time zones, but I feel surrounded by Brits. I mean, this is an attack. I'm the only Italian / American here. Though Jess and Paul are here with me in the States. So we're a global mix of everything. But like, when we talk about the in-person industry, it's undeniable. It is like, the business of it is owned mostly in the UK. So we're I feel in trend with what is happening there. The largest, companies are operating there. But let's dive right in. I mean, I see the chat is exploding. Everybody's commenting. There's a million people following. No pressure to the panel. But, it's been an incredible few years. I think we all agree. And, you know, listen, when everybody was saying, you know, in-person events are dead, I was like one of the few voices going out there saying, listen, I don't think I agree with that. I don't think this is the event Napster moment. Not at all. I think it's going to come back and it's actually going to hit right back in. But honestly, even with that type of understanding, gut feeling we all had, it was tough to anticipate such a comeback with this like level of intensity. So what is all happening with events? I want to start with Karina. Karina, do you want to tell us like what's your perspective? What is your take? What is happening? And then we'll move to the rest of them.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with what you've said, Julius. Events have come back, are coming back extremely strongly. Obviously, not just talking about our events as IMEX, but of course, we represent the global events business. And we can see that both on the exhibitor side, so the destinations, the hotels, the venues, but then also the buyer side and the agencies are just incredibly busy. And I think exactly what you predicted really, Julius, during the pandemic was that events would come back strongly. And I think people really understand maybe a little bit more than they did the power of events and the need for them, because when you miss something, you tend to understand what you miss more, I think, sometimes than, you know, when there's something there all the time. Oh, Julius, you're on mute.
Of course, I should have worn my shirt. I'm on mute. You are on mute. I have a shirt for that. Jessica, sorry about that. The pressure.
Yeah, I would totally agree. We're seeing the same thing. I think people maybe underestimated a little bit the power of human connection and the role that events play in building trust between customers and suppliers, and how that in-person interaction, though you can't build it online, even through Zoom, you know, when we meet, it adds a whole new dynamic to a relationship and the sense of belonging that events provide as well. It's really about, you know, the humanness of it all. And I think that was underestimated maybe in some of the predictions. And I think you were absolutely spot on. You know, we're obviously comparing to 22, but 2019 is kind of our benchmark as we're looking at recovery. And some of our shows clearly are coming back, you know, in a huge way. I mean, our KBiz show in January in Vegas saw a 26% increase in attendees compared to the pre-pandemic edition. And we just saw the same with Pizza Expo, you know, 9% increase on pre-pandemic recently, the Impression show in Long Beach. So, and it seems to be, you know, from market to market, those three shows are in completely different markets. But the appetite for those events, and they are strong events, you know, were pre-pandemic, they were strong and they're even stronger now, is very much there. So that's really what we're seeing.
I love that analysis. Paul?
Yeah, I completely agree with the former comments. I think for us, there was some nuance in the comeback. We do one-to-one meetings, we do conferences, we do trade shows. So there's a variety of responses, I think, from those audiences. We also benchmarked to 2019. I think a lot of us are doing that in the event space. And we are currently looking at a 25% in aggregate increase from 19 and a 42% increase from 22. So the surge is real. I actually think that a lot of things were in place pre-pandemic, and we forgot a little bit in the panic of the pandemic that ROI for marketers, events were seen as number one pre-pandemic and are being seen as number one again in every study that I've seen. So the other thing I'd say is that I do think we tend to, as humans, overestimate the impact of technology early on. So we all feel that, oh my goodness, virtual events are going to take over the world and there's a mass panic around it. But I would say, as a word of caution, we sort of underestimate the eventual impact of technology. So the fact of the matter is that tech is in our industry, it's in our business. I think that's a great thing. At the moment, it's being masked a little bit because of this surge back to the live event. But I think we'll finally end up in a place where they are both working together for a much better experience all around for the buyers and sellers. So I think it was just a natural reaction that we, those kind of comments that events are dead, which we never believe, frankly, were a little bit part of that overestimation of the impact of tech.
Dan, you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I think, and Paul, you just referenced it, but I saw a stat which I think was discussed at the recent CISO CEO summit from a Freeman and MDG survey, where event attendees rank in-person events as the most trustworthy. And I think, Paul, that goes to something that you just said. And let's also pat ourselves on the back. Why are people coming back to events? Because we put on great events. Right. There's a reason that people want to attend these things, whether it's the content, the exhibitors, the networking. So it wasn't a given. And I think as well, correct me if I'm wrong, that during the pandemic, it allowed event organizers to think hard and double their efforts and think, actually, why are people going to come back? So actually, if there was a positive, this is what people have told me through the chats I've had, it allowed people to pause and think about their propositions. We're going to move on to the next question, which is directed at you, Paul. And I should say again, guys, I know there's lots of questions in the chat, which we'll try and monitor as we go along, but feel free to keep asking them. I guess an open question, Paul, what are attendees saying to you? So I guess, you know, as event organizers, your teams are constantly surveying the attendees, you know, anecdotally, but also qualitatively as well. Give us a sense of some anecdotes and even maybe some stats, evidence that you've got in terms of what they're saying to you about the return to in-person.
Yeah, there's, in fact, I just came out of a meeting this morning where we were doing a debrief on our bar restaurant expo, which Jess and I actually, we were sort of co-locating, if that's a, that's probably too strong a word, but the pizza expo in Seattle and our bar restaurant expo were in Vegas at the same time. So we encourage people to cross into those areas. And Look, the surge back has created some challenges, I think. You know, number one, there's a lot of people coming to events, and they're tending, in our case at least, to really register later in cycle than we've ever seen before. So trying to get it, the experience right, that you know, 30,000 people turn up at an event rather than 20,000 as predicted, and making sure you've got the right experience for them registering, getting into the onto the show floor. I mean, I'll be candid with you, it's a nice challenge compared with being shut down in a pandemic, but it's a challenge nonetheless. So we are really having to be much more agile, I think, in our planning than we had before for that experience at the event. And we have had comments from attendees saying, wow, I didn't expect to see so many people coming at the same time to the event. So making sure that we're agile enough to say, hey, let's make sure we've got enough registration stands, make sure we've got enough people that are greeting folks, that, hey, if we are seeing a surge in attendance at a particular hour in the day, that we are there to make sure we're handholding and getting people through. So one of the comments we've had is that people have been surprised by the sheer volume of attendees at the event. That obviously translates into nice net promoter scores from exhibitors who are delighted that there's this volume of potential buyers. But the other nuance, again, to use that word, that I'm really delighted with is that we're actually seeing a better percentage of qualified attendees to the events. It's not just the numbers, it's the actual true buyers that are coming to the events, not the tire kickers, not the sort of peripheral or adjacent type of folks, but really high quality buyers. And the last thing I'll say, Dan, for us, we're slightly different, I think, at Questex. In the pre-pandemic, we truly believed in the value of digital content to build community that we then brought together live, that we then took back into a digital content area. The places where we had high engagement in the pandemic with our communities through digital websites, contents, webinars, virtual events, are the places we've seen the best comeback. As we've kept in touch with those databases, we've kept them live, we've figured out who went out of business, who didn't, and therefore we've got a better marketing platform to bring attendees to our events. So that story that everybody's talking about now, 365, 24/7, I think we were fortunate that we went into the pandemic with that strategy. It helped.
Thank you. Just before I get to Jessica and Karina, are you seeing any nuances between the sectors that you operate in, Paul, in terms of what attendees are demanding, the type of experience, the pre-reg conversions to attendance?
Short answer is really no. They're all doing really well. The longer answer is that our conferences tend to be much more content networking led. Our trade shows tend to be, we always have a conference, by the way, at every, we do believe in content very deeply. So the short answer is no, Dan. The nuance is that there are tweaks with content versus sure. networking versus buying experiences, I think is how I'd answer the question.
Thank you. And coming to you, Karina, and obviously you've got IMEX coming up just in, what, 5 or 6 weeks, not to scare you or remind you. What do you think is driving people to come back?
Well, obviously, representing the events industry, it is the surge in the event market globally. As Paul said, ROI was key before the pandemic. It's still key. But both of those things play into that. We've actually experienced for the Frankfurt show. So this is the second Frankfurt show post-pandemic. Last year, if people remember, we were actually just coming out of lockdown in Europe this time last year. So organizing the Frankfurt show, getting people registered, it was all very, very late. We've experienced something totally different this year. We're much more back to our normal pattern of our hosted buyers in particular registering at the pace that we would normally expect. So we've been tracking again against 2019, and the pacing has been more like 2019 than 2022 for the Frankfurt show. So that's been really a relief for us. In terms of why the demand is there, it's because those buyers have a huge amount of business that they need to place. And from an exhibitor side, you know, there is a trust there that will deliver high quality buyers, high quality appointments. And so we're seeing our exhibitors come back in force in terms of, we had, you know, the majority of them come back last year, but now they're coming back in larger sizes because the individual partners and the destinations can join them this year. And of course, we've got Asia coming back really strongly this year as well. So for us, there's just that demand in the marketplace is super strong. And I think, you know, going back to what Jessica said, those human connections, that hasn't gone. That's been amplified by the fact that people still, in some cases, haven't been connected since pre-pandemic. So I think all of those things are driving our show right now.
Cool. Jess, before we move on to the next question, which I know Julius is going to ask you, do you have anything to add to that regarding... Driving attendance.
Yeah, just one small point I wanted to pick up on something that Paul said, which was the lateness of registration and the some challenge around that too. You know, MGE has been doing some good research recently, and they were showing that 50% or more are registering in the last month, which, you know, when it comes to, you know, planning for F&B, planning for your reg counters, planning for your reg staff, is something that, you know, we just have to adapt to it. I don't think it's going to change. I think COVID changed behavior. Wasn't it great to know how many people were coming so far out in the past? I don't think we ever really appreciated that. Now we don't have it and we have to work with it. So that's something that we have to pay attention to.
That's great. Jessica, on that, someone was asking, you share some stats from the Vegas show. There, Allison was asking if you could repeat the stats that you mentioned earlier. But yeah, I'll leave you to it. I don't know if you have it handy, sort of in your memory, but somebody from the audience was asking that.
About the two shows that I mentioned at first.
Correct.
So CABE is 26% increase in attendance versus pre-pandemic. And then our pizza show was 9% increase compared to pre-pandemic in terms of attendance. So, you know, both shows, you know, sort of bouncing back in a big way. The other thing that's interesting, like Paul mentioned, that we've always been at the same time as the bar and restaurant show, the Questex bar and restaurant show, but we've never really sort of properly worked together to promote that, right? And promote the fact that there is a food and beverage week in Las Vegas that week. And so we've been doing a lot of work around that, and working with the destination, I think, is really important. Because the other thing about coming back and the surge is that the destination, you know, really needs to support that as well. You know, how easy is it to get an Uber or a taxi to get, you know, and all those other smaller things, you know, the restaurants well staffed. So that's an important element, is working with those destinations too.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast so far. Just going to take a brief pause to tell you a little bit more about our official venue sponsor, the Business Design Centre. The BDC is London's most stylish venue, playing host to hundreds of conferences and exhibitions every year. It is also the permanent home to over 125 businesses who occupy the offices and showrooms based there all year round. Opened over 36 years ago in 1986 and formerly the Royal Agricultural Hall, the building was rescued from demolition in 1981 by entrepreneur Sam Morris and was fully restored and reopened as the UK's first integrated trade exhibition and conference complex. Today, the BDC attracts almost 1 million visitors every year. Sustainability is at the forefront of everything they do at the BDC, with a goal to reach net zero before 2030. For over 13 years, it has been a certified carbon neutral venue, and the steps they have taken to improve their impact on the planet have been recognised within the events industry and further. The BDC has received recognition with multiple awards, including Exhibition News CSR Award in both 2018 and 2019, and more recently, the EN ESG Award in 2022. Please visit bdc.london for more information. Now back to the podcast.
Now, I want to move to the next question, Jessica here, and it's... You know, it's an interesting one because, you know, we're not only, I feel, experiencing a comeback to in-person. It's kind of the pendulum swinging back towards in-person from sort of a couple of years of online meetings and discussions. I feel there's more to that. There's also like sort of, especially in technology, whatever is happening all around us and sort of artificial intelligence, AI, lots of questions about that. So we're facing a standardization of marketing to a certain extent, where it's almost going to be very, very difficult to recognize sort of, you know, what is the real marketing? What is this real? Is it a person talking to me? Is it, or is it, you know, ChatGPT-4? Or is it just like an image generated that is talking to me? You know, so there's going to be a lot of confusion going forward, which puts events, again, at the forefront as the most human sort of personal type of touch point that you can have as a brand, where like you can fake, you know, one-to-one interaction. So incredible sort of concentrations of factors that are pushing towards the in-person industry. Now, I work a lot with tech events in that vertical. And in that vertical, I was curious to learn how, you know, a big event planner was telling me CFOs, CEOs looking for to invest in startups, they can't deal with the amount of information. They just rely on us to select the best startups for them and connect these two audiences, you know, beyond the content, beyond sort of the opportunity. And so there's almost like a new pyramid of needs of people attending events where connection and networking are at the top of it. You know, the real one-to-one interaction, the filtering, the noise all around us on LinkedIn, online, and whatever. What's your take on the networking being the main driver to events in person?
Well, it's always been, since I started in this business, and that was a long time ago, discovery and networking's always been number one and number two, right? It's always been what's driven people to go to shows. But now I think there's a little bit of nuance to that too. It's not just about the networking, but it's about how do I build my personal network as well? How do I build my personal database? And I think events are really helping people be able to do that. So, you know, you referenced the Freeman research earlier, and I thought that was a great piece of research, because one of the takeaways from that is not all networking is equal, right? There are different ways that people want to network now that's maybe different. And so in that research, the top one that came out was they want to not just network, but they want to interact with experts, you know, on a more of a one-to-one or in a smaller way. And so what we're seeing now is, you know, content is a big driver too. So content plus and networking is really what this sort of expert interaction is. So they're not mutually exclusive anymore, right? It's we deliver content and we must deliver networking. Now the two things can be combined. And so we've been experimenting and doing, you know, being very successful with, you know, think tanks at our shows. So smaller groups, you know, led by a moderator who's an expert. You get peer-to-peer interaction there, which of course is what people want as well, but you also get the expert interaction. So that's something that we've seen, you know, being successful. So networking, yes, is still, you know, one of the biggest drivers, along with discovery, but you have to be a bit more intentional about it now, and it has to be more curated, and we can't just sort of put everyone in a room and hope for the best. Like we have to look at it a little bit differently.
That's very, very interesting. Paul, Karina, do you have a sort of a short addition to this as we move to the next question?
Just to say, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, we've been doing like quite curated content and curated journeys as well for our buyers for quite a long time. And that's something that we're seeing success with. So how do you create sort of micro experiences in a macro event? And that's something for us that we've been looking at a lot. And that goes back to everything I think that you were saying, Jessica, which is giving people a personalized experience, peer-to-peer interaction, as well as all the benefits of coming to this massive, amazing event that has lots going on.
Yeah, I agree, Karina. I agree, Jess. I think we are in an era, the beginning of an era, where curation is going to be increasingly important. I think I tried to introduce this term "return on time" internally, but realized the acronym was ROT, which is not a great acronym. But I think one of the reasons that networking at events is so powerful is that you can do a lot of it in a short period of time, as opposed to trying to do it sort of non-live, if you will, or through digital platforms. So I do think we are going to be using technology to we are already using technology to create better experiences and better networking. And I think the old days of just show up and we hope that serendipity is going to just work. I think that's going to be pushed to its limit very, very quickly. Last thing I'd say is that we're also seeing a lot more younger people that are going to be the event attendees of the future, as folks over the age of 50 have and are retiring out of the business, who have in many cases been the predominant event attendees for lots of reasons. You know, younger people expect more curation of their experience. And therefore, I think the two things together are going to really push us to use the technology much more aggressively to make it a better curated networking experience.
And you make a great point there in terms of technology, right? Because like we tend to think that like technology for events is dead when we think in terms of virtual events. Probably, you know, it's not doing super well. But on the other end, we have a $4 billion plus acquisition of Cvent and like three other acquisitions of in-person specific technology happening there. There's almost like no company left to buy, to be honest, in person. But there's a lot of interest from investors in that sense. That's a great segue for the next question then.
Yeah, I just want to, Tracy's put a comment in the chat, and maybe Paul, because it'd be useful to get your view, because I think you mentioned something about this before, but and also Karina, because obviously your event's coming up. But she said, are we only seeing long-term attendees coming back? What about new attendees? Are they being attracted to events, especially younger attendees? You just mentioned that, but so I don't know who wants to say that.
Bar Restaurant Expo, I don't know if this is a good stat or a bad stat, by the way, but 40% of the attendees were first time. Wow. Sort of worries me. Well, actually, it doesn't worry me. A lot of bars and restaurants went out of business in the pandemic, just for the record. So it doesn't worry me that we're getting new attendees in. But I think actually to the contrary, the longer term attendees, I mean, I think the stat, don't quote me directly on this, but I think the stat here in the US is that 50% of workers over the age of 50 retired in the pandemic. Wow. 50% of workers over the age of 50 retired in the pandemic. So we have to start looking at the next level of quotes, age group or generation, whatever the right phrase is. And their expectations are very different. I mean, I have two 20-year-old daughters who their expectation of attending a live music event is very different than mine. And there's a lot more pressure on the organizer to get it right than just turn up.
Yeah, sure. I agree with that too. But it's also, I think we're seeing that especially younger people coming into our events are expecting a more of a consumer experience, and they're making decisions to attend things they want to attend because they're not just from a business perspective, but they actually want to go to them and spend time there. We have to pay attention to that for sure.
Cool. Thank you. I'm just going to move on. And at 48 years old, I missed the retirement option there during the pandemic, which is a shame. Okay. So, Karina, this is for you. Obviously, I guess you could say that it was always this way, but we certainly live in uncertain times. Obviously, war, Russia, Ukraine, inflation, so a difficult economic backdrop. Deglobalization is definitely an issue for trade shows. How do you, and I should say, you know, supply chain issues, increased cost of labor, materials, the fact that, you know, organizers having to put their costs up to participate. How's that been affecting, or is it affecting, exhibitor participation, Karina?
So for us, it's not affecting exhibitor participation in the sense that our exhibitors are still coming in strongly, but I think it's giving all of our exhibitors and us as organisers added pressures and headaches and challenges. You know, when you hear from some of the exhibitors that some of their stand costs have gone up 35%, that's just extraordinary kind of budgetary impacts to absorb. So what we're finding is and we'll see really in a month, is how they manage those budgets, really. So what does that impact in terms of the receptions that they can host, the F&B they do on the stand, all of those, the quality or the, you know, exuberance of the stands that they're creating and the experiences around that. So there's, for us, they're still coming and they're coming strongly, but of course, we recognise that those kind of cost increases are going to impact them in some way. But we're not, at this point, we're not seeing any other major impacts except, you know, depending on the exhibitor, working with them as well to try to help them manage those costs. So what we do as a team, or our sales team and our ops team, are really good at working with our exhibitors and actually helping them to relook at their stand design, putting them in touch with different people, you know, different stand constructors who can give them creative solutions. So we aren't precious about doing those things, and we'll help our exhibitors manage their spend in the best way that they can.
Thank you. Just a follow-up for you, Karina. In terms of strategic objectives for exhibitors, have you seen those change? Have they been telling you they want, you know, more lead gen and awareness, mixture, blended approach? You know, what are they saying to you?
Yeah, so ours is a very business focused show. I mean, content is massive, but, you know, Jessica mentioned what attendees are coming for. For us, it's always been business, then networking, and then a massive gap before content comes in. And our exhibitors expect business. You know, we've got a massive hosted buyer program, over 3,000 buyers in the show that we're hosting in, and essentially our exhibitors are paying for those buyers to be there. And so, it's like pre-pandemic, they want to meet those buyers and they want to see them on their stands and see them at their breakfast and evening events and have individual appointments with them and have their stand presentations full. However, lead gen is something that they only started asking for after the pandemic, because exhibitors were exposed to you know, virtual event systems, they kind of understood the type of data that those they could give. So that is something that our exhibitors only in the past year have started asking for. And this year will be the first year that we're able to actually give them online leads, as well as, you know, lead scanning included on the app, so that they can get sort of a fuller picture of all their leads. So we're pretty excited about being able to offer that to our exhibitors for the first time and measure how that impacts their ROI.
Sure. Thank you. I know we're a little bit pushed for time. So Julius, I think we're going to push on to the next question.
I'm the one annoying everybody with saying, we've got to now move to the next one. You know, I want to make sure also we cover some of the questions from the audience. There's a ton coming in, so There's a lot of homework for me to do while you guys speak on the next one. But, you know, obviously, a ton of people coming back to events. Great, amazing, fantastic. We're loving it. But as Dan mentioned earlier, very unique global situation. You know, we're out of a pandemic, you know, incumbent sort of conflict in Europe of sorts, you know, political tension, you know, deglobalization. So there's a lot of challenges. Cost is probably the result of that, that we all understand and we can go beyond. It's like, as a result of whatever we're going through, cost is high for everybody. This is not a US or UK specific problem. It's everywhere. So Paul, what are the challenges for you to deal with such an influx of in-person in this climate and this environment?
Yeah, again, I hate to keep using the word nuance, but I think it does depend a little bit on the type of event. It depends on where the event is. So for instance, an issue we have right here in the US right now is visa issues. So if you have a lot of people that are queuing up for a visa and the processing time is 3-4 months and people are signing up a month before the show, you've got an obvious challenge. You know, they're signing up late, they can't get a visa. And that is an issue that is being lobbied for here by the events industry in the US. So if you have for instance, our World Tea Show, which we've just floored in Las Vegas, tea has a big international contingent for Sri Lanka, India, parts of Africa, China. And it's been a real challenge for us as those pavilions cannot get visas for the exhibitors. Unfortunately, it's a challenge I don't have a lot of control over. And I'm a huge fan of just focus on what you control and don't worry too much about what you can't. So you have to accept that there's things you can do and there's things you cannot do. And you have to move on to what next. And yeah, we try to look at local agents in that case. If you can't come from India, who is your local distributor? Let's bring the local distributor into the show to represent you and help you do that. We haven't seen at all, and this is one, I'm a paranoid person by nature when it comes to business. We have not yet seen any impact at all from all of those macro environmental issues, apart from the one I mentioned, which is international pavilions here into the US. And I don't know how long that carries on, Julius, but, you know, all I can tell you is that we're working really hard to create better buyer-seller interactions, whether it be digitally or live, and provide better ROI. And I think, look, the other thing I'd say is that the world didn't stop in the pandemic. All of our customers created new products, created new solutions, created new ways of going to market, and they've got to get out there and let everybody know about them. Not just through events, digitally as well, and all the other marketing channels that they use. And I think we forget sometimes, we think we're in the event industry. We're not in the event industry. We connect buyers and sellers. People have things to sell and people have things to buy. And as long as we do that with more and more intelligence, with less and less friction, we're a very valuable partner, I think. So irrespective of the macro environment.
I love that perspective because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, obviously, newsjacking in this sense and, you know, trying to find an impact for the industry of like whatever new, you know, Harry Styles song and what's the impact on the events industry type of thing. So I'm sure with like a war and a pandemic, everybody's trying to find the impact for the events industry, but it's a, you know, refreshing perspective to hear. Listen, it's probably not happening for us as much as it's happening for other industries, or at least in your case, or at least we have to look at it in a more sort of balanced way, literally look at the priorities here. Yes, we're probably in an inflationary environment, but, you know, that's, you know, affecting everybody. So probably we don't have a direct effect because the demand we're facing is like unprecedented anyway. Dan, we're going to move to the next one really quickly. I asked for more questions to come in the chat. If I missed like your question before, I probably did. So repost it now. Now is a good time to get your airtime. Okay.
So this is next for you, Jessica, and actually I'm going to combine it with, a statement that I've just seen in the chat from an Amanda Miller, who said, it makes me wonder if we're hit a tipping point in late Q4 23 or early 24, you know, the economy, supply chain issues. There's excitement now with the themes of we're back in person, but makes me wonder, worry about the future. So do you think it's going to last?
I think it will. I think that we've just come out of the worst thing that our events, that the events industry has ever experienced. We've just come out of zero, like revenue. Like whoever thought, we've just come through that. And I feel like if we can come through that and come back like this, then, you know, we all have to be realistic about the challenges that are around us. But, you know, we do remain very optimistic. I think that what's important is that we have to continue to deliver. Like, we really have to continue to deliver on that ROI if it's going to last. And the expectations of our customers are high. They're higher than they were perhaps before the pandemic. And so that we need to keep very connected to that as to what is driving them and keep delivering it. And I'm going to come back to one of the stats you mentioned earlier, which was the trust factor. Like 75% of people are ranking in-person events as their most trusted source of information, right? And that is incredible. It's higher than academic institutions. It's higher than even media. It's higher than online. It's higher than anything. And so if we are that trusted resource, then we are in good shape, right? We're in a good position to keep delivering. I think that we have to keep a pulse on what the younger generation want from us in order for us to be, for this to be sustainable as well. We can't ignore that. We have to pay, you know, close attention to it. But I think if we get it all right and we keep doing what we're doing well and listening to the customers and pivoting where we need to, then I think that yes, this will last.
Sure. So, and you mentioned sustainability, and it's something we're going to come on to in a minute. I know, Julius, you want to move on to tech, which is a little bit about event tech.
Yes, I can't wait to dig. Obviously, that's where I get excited with a lot of people. There's a lot of people from tech companies here that want to know, you know, what's the future for them. You know, it's been pretty tough. This is an invite for, since we're gathering quite a few people. This is like the size of a major conference in the events industry in terms of audience and attention right now. So it's always important to remember that, you know, technology sort of literally saved a lot of businesses during the pandemic, right? With virtual events and all of that. And right now, obviously, these businesses are having the same type of trouble that, you know, in-person events sort of faced during the pandemic. So this is a global call to chill a lot and when there's the conversation in terms of in-person versus virtual and sort of to embrace more the spectrum of events. But I want to ask Karina here, obviously, you know, we worked together on some projects as well. On a virtual side during the pandemic, and we had sort of a lot of back and forth. But I feel, you know, especially looking at the past 5 acquisitions of in-person businesses that just happened, you know, the Tarsus, the Hive and all of those, it seems like they tend to be mostly trade show driven. Like there's a lot of that element there. It's almost like natural if I look at what happened during the pandemic, in a sense, like virtual events probably the most underserved segment of the virtual events revolution were trade shows. It's like, you know, content-based programs kind of like, yes, had a blast, but whenever there was like that element of closing business, as Paul was saying earlier, right, which is at the core of the trade show business, there wasn't a way to do it, and I don't think there is still to date in virtual event tech. You know, I feel that, you know, that's sort of repurposing, so it's pushing virtual event platforms to create more opportunities. But like, so what's your take right now, Karina, on, you just signed up a new technology support partner for IMEX. So I want to know sort of what's going on in the mind of a trade show like yours, you know, when you're looking at tech today.
Yeah, so I think we're always looking at tech to enable better connections between our clients, between the exhibitors and the buyers, and to enable a more effective business experience or networking experience when they're on site at the show. That doesn't preclude them having that networking and those connections in the virtual space, pre-show, post-show, but really what we're trying to do with the tech is to enable that really effective in-person experience. So as you were saying, Jessica or Paul, that it's not just serendipity and that we're using that tech to help us create those more personalized experiences and help people make the right choices for the time they have at the event, because our time is very precious and you want to know if you're going to an event that that time will be well utilized. So on the one side, we're utilizing it, we want to utilize it for that. On the other side, I think tech can serve trade shows and our clients to serve better data. So things like your online leads, being able to connect with people, understanding what happened on your booth during the show, or from an organizer's perspective, being able to connect the dots between someone being scanned in for a sustainability session and the fact that they were on your sustainability webpage, and being able to serve a more personalized online experience during the year. That's kind of your holy grail, isn't it? To connect those dots. And I think where tech is now, we're just getting to the point where we can do that. The other thing we've looked at from a tech perspective is that we can plug in best in class technologies, because tech is moving at such a pace that we know that there'll be small tech companies that come up doing amazing things on floor planning software or whatever, wayfinding, whatever it is. And we want to be able to give the opportunity to our customers to experience those when they come up. So being able to plug in like a plug and play approach, I think, is important, because I don't think one system can do everything. And then the other thing we're looking at is how can we automate our processes and systems better internally, so that our team can better serve our clients day to day, rather than just being focused on the many administrative tasks that we all know that we have. So those are kind of some of the core principles that we've looked at this year to try to rebuild and improve our tech stack.
Awesome. Final question then, take it away.
So we're going to, you want to move on? We're going to move on to the
let's
final question.
With the last question, and then I collected some of the best ones from the audience.
Okay.
And by the way, short note, Paul, everybody likes Roth. So that's people are going for it.
Yeah, all right.
Trademark.
It's on record.
Get some t-shirts done with alongside Julius's I'm on mute. front and back. So yeah, because we want to go to some questions in a couple of minutes. Just the last question for everybody. Around sustainability. So again, I have lots of conversations with people about this. There's lots of good stuff said. There is some action. But do we think it's a priority for trade show organizers? According to the NUFI study, it's still relatively low on priorities. Maybe Jessica, do you want to pick this one up first?
Yeah, I mean, we're a big industry, you know, in the US and Canada directly, you know, we support around 400,000 jobs. And with that comes responsibility, right? Like with any industry, there's an environmental impact of what we do, right? And we have to take it seriously. And, you know, recently, we, along with 13 other organizations, actually IMEX was one of them too, we, you know, supported a sustainability research report, Finding the Future. And it was really about how, you know, can we work together better? Because this is one of the places where we as an industry really can come together, no matter whether we compete or not, right, to try and figure this out. I think the key thing, though, is that we can't as organizers do it alone either. Really, we have to work more closely with the venues, the cities, the hotels, our general service contractors. And this report really, you know, started to dig into how could we do that, like what's happening now and what can we do better in order to do that. And so there's some, you know, that are doing, you know, great things. You know, MGM Resorts have invested in, you know, renewable energy, you know, for their facilities. And so there's really good things happening, but we need to do more of it, and we need to do it, you know, more consistently and collaboratively across the board. But I think it's critical. It's really important for the sustainability of our business. Yeah.
I guess same question to you, Paul, but I'm just going to phrase it slightly differently. What does sustainability mean to you in the context of the trade show ecosystem?
Yeah, I was really disappointed to see that it's, quote, not a priority. I think that is if we as an industry are saying it's not a priority, which is I think what the question said, then I think we're misleading ourselves, because we are an industry that is dependent upon travel. We're dependent upon food and beverage and experience and emissions. And if we don't get this right, we don't have an industry. I mean, and if that isn't a priority, then I don't know what is. But I fear that just like climate change, it's a slow, complex, very difficult to see impact from day one. So I'm going to give you a straight answer, Dan. For us, it was just let's start doing things. We did a lot of things very early with the industry. We've joined the Net Zero Carbon Initiative very early. We made sure that as a smaller company in the general scheme of things, we were right there at the forefront of being a platinum sponsor of that initiative. In fact, I just re-signed today. But we at the same time said, let's launch our own initiative. So we have a Quest Zero initiative as a company playing on the Quest X brand. In 2 weeks' time, we have a big show in Berlin. The entire show will be measured for its carbon emission. The entire show, for everybody's travel in, the emissions at the venue, et cetera, et cetera. And we're using that to try to influence the entire ecosystem. So for me, we have the disadvantage of not being a multi-billion dollar company. So I can't throw a lot of people at this, unfortunately, but we have the advantage of being small enough to be agile. So we've signed up with ILA there in the UK, the association. We are using their trace tool across our events. By the end of this year, we will have a number in terms of our carbon emission, and we'll move to the what is the plan to reduce. The real challenge in sustainability is that it's more than just carbon emissions. It's got to educate an entire industry and ecosystem on why this is a priority. So I'm a little bit more optimistic for the industry. I the people I talk to in the industry, including the folks on this call, it is a priority. It moves in terms of the priority stack, but it ain't priority number 72. At all. Certainly not where I'm.
Yeah, and to be fair, the survey wasn't suggesting that. It's just possibly not the top priority. Karina, I'm just going to briefly let you pitch in, and then we're going to go to questions. IMEX and sustainability, how do the two meet?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it is one of our top priorities. We have three top strategic priorities this year, and net zero is the third one. So we'll be launching actually at the show our net zero, our initial net zero roadmap. And we've already measured actually last year's show using the trace tool. It was challenging to do it, and we've actually put... we have a person dedicated to sustainability and a couple of sustainability consultants. So we do take it very seriously. I think in terms of how important is it for our industry in terms of events and trade shows, I think it's critical. And one of the reasons it's critical, if no other reason actually resonates with you in terms of the need to reduce impact, it's the fact that our clients are going to be and already are demanding this of us. There's no, it's cognitively, it's not coherent for a big corporation to have ESG goals and then not look at how their staff are traveling, what events they're going to and attending, how that event is organized, what events they're exhibiting at, and whether there's a carbon impact of that, because they have to report on that. So even if nothing else resonates, I think from a pure business perspective, it is critical for us to actually do something about this. And as Jessica said, we can do it as an industry because we have to, because when we look at things, we see the whole supply chain that we need to influence and work with, as well as travel. So, and those issues are harder than what we control as an organizer. That's what I would say.
Thank you. Okay, so I think we're going to go. Thank you very much, panel, for answering those questions. I think, Judas, we're going to go to some...
Let's make it happen. So before we move to the Q&A, we've got 5 minutes or so before we close. I wanted to thank everybody that connected. This is going to be recorded on LinkedIn, so you can refer back to that. obviously thanking the panel before we close. Paul, Karina, Jessica, you've been amazing. I know it's a super busy period for a lot of you. And Dan, obviously, for being a great, amazing co-host here. Now, questions from the audience. We've got quite a few. So I will ask you, if possible, like, this is probably the most difficult time, to shorten the answers to like a 10, 15 seconds one. I know they're loaded questions, so they require quite some thought, but like I ask you to do the best you can to shorten it up. So first off, very interesting one, right? I don't think we've seen such a wave of acquisitions of in-person businesses, you know, almost like in the past decade or so in the end, like, you know, all of a sudden. Probably there are some other moments, but like this one is specifically, you know, important. Like in a short period of time, 5-6 companies have been acquired or been invested in. What are your thoughts on all of these acquisitions? This is the question seen in the last few months. What is happening? Bill, quickly, we start with Jessica.
I think it shows the vibrancy and how we're thriving as an industry. I mean, you don't see this kind of activity unless there's really good stuff going on. You know, interestingly, we just recently acquired a consumer business, first, you know, consumer business we've ever acquired. So I think, you know, we're looking at things differently in terms of, you know, acquisitions as well. There's a lot going on in the industry. And also we're doing things a little bit differently to how we've done before. And I think that, that's probably going to continue.
Awesome. Paul?
There's a lot of dry powder in private equity. I'm private equity held. So they're looking to put that money to work. Events are a great place to put it to work. You get good cash flow, you get good profit. So you've got that angle. And then I think on the public company side of things, you've got the absolute demand from shareholders for continued growth. And this is an area of the business that all the world that I think they see that. So yeah, there's going to be more.
Karina?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Paul said. And I would just add, I think it shows a lot of confidence in the long-term sort of future of the industry. So the person earlier who was a little bit worried about next year and what that will bring, I think maybe this allays some of those fears.
We've got great re-sign rates, by the way. First quarter, the re-sign rates are off the charts. We get to predict a year ahead. Yes, that sure. It's all right. It's not panic. It's okay.
Yeah. Wow. Quick one. Before, when we posted the event, we asked like some of the audience to pose their questions super early. So I want to reward those that committed to ask questions as soon as we posted like a week ago. And you know, the most recurring one was about AI. So yeah. It's undeniable. What's your take on the impact on your business specifically? Are you looking at it? Do you think that there's an application, or is it just, you know, whatever, a buzzword? We'll start with Karina.
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. I think it's really interesting for two different viewpoints. One is around processes, automation of processes internally. I think that's really exciting. The other one thing that we've been looking at, though, is the ethics around it and starting to have that conversation in terms of the use of it in marketing and blogs and things like that. And so the way we're looking at it is at the moment is how can it help us do some work that we weren't getting to before. So like session synopsis, you know, you put in a session recording into it and ask it for the bullet points, it can do that kind of thing. But you've got to still have a human curation over the top of it to make sure it's relevant to your audience and it really resonates. So we're just looking at things like that and the ethics around it and wanting to be very transparent if we do use it.
Completely agree. Embrace it. Embrace it. Be curious and don't be scared of it.
Yeah. We also, I think, need to sort of help our employees and train our staff around it too a little bit because, you know, it's so new and there's an ethical part of that too, right? Karina said, and I agree with that. And so we need to make sure that, you know, we're supporting our staff and helping them understand how it should and could be used. Is going to be important.
Love it. So final questions for all. There's actually a conversation happening in the comments as we speak on community, right? You know, I remember like 20 years ago when I joined the industry, it was like this talk of like the future of the events industry is community. Well, it's 20 years. You know, what is happening with that? The future now is like, are we in a better position to implement this community, or is it just a marketing stunt? What do you think about this? Do you have any opinion about the role of community? Are we transitioning to that model? Anybody?
I for me, it's, and community is a little bit of an overused word, I think, but for me, it is a, it is essential to be more valuable to your entire set of stakeholders, that you are engaging with them as often as you can be. Content is really the hook there. Data is really the output. Events are really going to get better as you use that content to get better data to provide better buyer-seller connections. It's the whole reason we're at this company doing what we're doing at Questex. It's why we came here in 2018. It's why we implemented it before the pandemic. It's why we survived the pandemic. And it's why I think we're thriving since the pandemic. So the more you can serve and know about your community, surely the more intelligent you get in putting them together in a better way. For me, it's religion. Community really matters.
Jessica?
Yeah, and it takes, you know, I know, you know, for years, you know, in the events business, we've been, you know, talking about how important, you know, 365 engagement is. But if you really are going to build a community, you can't just speak to them once a year or, you know, 12 weeks out, you know, because you're campaigning to get them to come to a show. And so that's a huge focus for us. Like it's critical. You know, it's no coincidence that, you know, we see such great events and they have media, right, alongside them, that in the past, years ago, was seen as like not important. And now, obviously, we're back to like, it's so important, right? It's and that's because it allows the brand to talk to the customer 365. So yeah, I agree. I think that it's more important than ever. But I think that we're doing it really well in a lot of areas already, which is good.
Awesomeness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just finish by saying that I think community has many connotations. That word, so as Paul said, can be an overused word. And community doesn't have to mean setting up a closed subscription model business. So I think community can be a far broader term where, as Paul said, as Jessica said, you're engaging with your audience, you're understanding their needs, you're delivering more value to them. And as a result of it, you're really serving the community that your event sits in. And I think you can look at it like that, as well as right through to that subscription model. But it doesn't have to be that.
Look at that. It's 31. That's on time. Because we're in the events industry, these things matter. Dan, I'll leave it to you to close. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Julius. And just to say thank you once again to the panel. I think ultimately, yeah, we serve communities. They will vote with their feet, their eyeballs. They will decide what they like, what they don't like. They'll either tell you directly or they'll do it passively. So ultimately, that's how the businesses will survive.